I used these brushes. Even though the canvases she showed me were all clearly originals, studies of places she'd seen, landscapes that had stayed with her, I found myself interested in asking questions. Real ones. At first, I was trying to distract myself from how I was still uncomfortably turned on, a case of my body acting without my brain's permission. But she spoke with such authority about the work she made, rifling through canvases in her little fur-collared coat. I was coming to realize that I always found that compelling, that kind of mastery and passion, that she could be talking about her rock collection this way and I'd still want to know more. We'd come to the back of her finished work. "These last few are exercises for class," she said. I caught a glimpse of a piece that looked familiar. "Wait," I said. "That looks like, well, Picasso, actually." "That's because it is." I raised my eyebrows at her. "It is." "Simon," she said, ruffling my hair. "You're really sort of adorable." While she pulled out the painting for me to get a better look, I decided that I needed to do something about my haircut. "It's a take on the really famous one, the old guitarist, for Nathaniel's forms and figures class. All first-year students have to take it. He's really into imitation as a teaching practice." "What does that mean?" I asked, peering at the painting. It was obvious what it meant, but I wanted to hear her say it, especially because this didn't seem like an outright copy. I didn't know much about Picasso, but I was pretty sure that the guitarist in his painting was a man. This was an elderly woman, wrapped around an instrument that wasn't a guitar. "It's a kokyu," she said in response to my unasked question. "My father has one in the house. It belonged to my great-aunt. They're beautiful, aren't they?"
"Yeah."
I reached out to skim my fingers across the canvas.
"Why doesn't he have you come up with your own ideas?"
"Because, when you're searching for your own style, it can be useful to try on those of successful artists. Nathaniel says we should see what we can steal from them. So, like, if I imitate Picasso, really try to do the same thing with my brushstrokes that he did with his, I'll probably fail, but I'll understand something about his process, and so..."
And she put on a Nathaniel voice.
"I'll learn something about my own, about my soul."
"He really loves his souls," I said.
"Yeah."
Her smile faded.
"He got kind of angry at me for changing out some of Picasso's elements here, and said I was straying too far from the assignment. During critique, he said the nicest things about the paintings that looked like exact copies. It seemed kind of stupid, honestly. I was still working with Picasso's style."
I was pretty sure I knew the answer to my next question.
"Does he just have a thing for Picasso?"
"No," she said. "He works in conjunction with the art history teacher, hands out a list of painters that she teaches in her first month overview. It's like this whole project. We study the painter we choose, their life, their history, really get a feel for their work. It counts for both classes."
"Who else do people imitate?"
She gave me a funny look. I was asking too many questions. I stuck my hands in my pockets and looked down.
It'd be good to have a jump on this assignment if I ended up coming here."
Marie-Hélène laughed.
"I'll do you one better," she said. "Go get me another coffee from the cafe, and we can try a little breaking and entering."
At my shocked look, she amended,
"Into my friend's studios. What did you think I meant?"
At that moment, she sounded so much like Holmes that my stomach turned. Was that why I wanted to immediately run off and do what she told me to? Stupid, so stupid, I thought. What is it with these girls? Why do I always end up trailing after them? But this one studied under Nathaniel, and she had a group of friends who were forging paintings, whether or not they knew that was what they were doing. And no, I didn't want to be with her, but she had this immaculate spray of freckles across her nose, and so, of course, I told her yes. What kind of latte did she want this time?
"You know, this might be the best not date I've ever had," Marie-Hélène said, pushing open the door to her friend Naomi's studio. It wasn't real breaking and entering, of course.
There wasn't even any lockpicking involved. People had their personal supplies stored in strong boxes under their tables, but the spaces appeared to be communally used.
"Naomi did her project on Joan Miró, A lot of people did. Professor Ziegler was pretty funny about it, actually, she said, and now I had Nathaniel's last name. He had an unofficial prize for the best one, and hooked them up with some kiosk outside the Centre Pompidou, the museum that sells imitation paintings to tourists. Supposedly you make pretty good money doing it. Naomi had imitated Joan Miró. Rolf, in the studio next door, had chosen Da Vinci. The next was Twombly, all painted squiggles and sparks, and then a black-and-white Ernst collage where a girl in an old-fashioned gown held an iPhone to her ear. Nathaniel really hated that one, she said. And then an American Gothic, a really terrible imitation of Starry Night. Actually, I thought, maybe Simon could go to this school. And finally, as I caught Marie-Hélène not so subtly checking the time, we wound up in her friend Hannah's studio. The girl with a paint-splattered backpack, the one who warned me about the men at the pool party. She's from Munich, Marie-Hélène explained. She really loves all the 20th century German painters. A lot of us don't like taking art history. We'd rather make our own. But Hannah really works hard at it. She's a great artist, and she's really smart. Langenberg. I kept my face neutral. As smart as you, I asked. You tell me, Marie-Hélène said with a shrug, and began to pull the paintings back one at a time for me to see. They were all surrealist landscapes, every last one of them done in clashing neon colors, horrible to look at. No hushed scenes in sitting rooms, no dark colors, no people even. And maybe my taste in art was just underdeveloped, or maybe I was just frustrated to again have hit a brick wall. But when we got to the last of them, I knew I was done. It was a relief. Maybe I just drank too much last night, I told her, taking off my hat to rub at my temples. I think I just need a nap. Sorry to be so lame. Not lame, she said, and took the hat from me to prop on her own head. She grinned. I actually had a lot of fun today. I had, too. Almost a normal kind of fun, when I used to go hang out at the pub on long afternoons, having the kinds of conversations where I didn't feel like I needed an encyclopedia, a dictionary, and a scorekeeper. Where my friends liked me, and I liked them, and that was the whole of it. When I could go home and bicker with my sister and read a book in bed and not worry that everything I cared about was retreating slowly out of my grip. The kind of fun where nobody's shooting at you, I thought. And when I took my hat back from Marie-Hélène, I kissed her on the cheek. Before I could pull away, she snaked a finger through my belt loop. I could see you when I come back, she said quietly. I think I might like that. I'll be in London, I told her. But if you ever come out that way, don't call me, I wanted to say, because you're lovely and deserve better than an imaginary posh asshole who doesn't like you as much as he should. If I do, she kissed me on the corner of my mouth, a slow kiss, an unexpected one. It wasn't chaste and it wasn't romantic. It was a suggestion. On ellipsis, I closed my eyes against it. See you later, Simon, she said, and I dragged my heels back to Greystone, not sure what I'd say to Holmes when I got there. I was so lost in my head that I didn't notice the car trailing along behind me. At first I thought I was imagining it, but the sky was bleak and whispery with snow, the roads nearly empty, and the black car crept down the street like a moving tumor. I slowed at a crosswalk. The car slowed, too. When I ducked through an alley and out onto a different road, the car was there moments later. Finally, I stopped at a corner, my hat in my hands, and I waited. It pulled up to the curb. The back window rolled down. "Mr. Watson," the voice said, "do you need a ride?" The click of a gun cocking. It wasn't a suggestion. I got in. 7. The black car didn't take me to a cell or a warehouse or a secluded field with a pre-dug grave. I wouldn't have known to be afraid if it had, because I couldn't see where we were going. When I climbed into the car, I was immediately grabbed and blindfolded, my hands tied with what felt like a zip tie.
All I'd seen before I was bound was a man in a suit with a black bag over his head. What the hell was going on?
James,
the voice said, inflectionless, the slip of the bag mask being pulled off. Before we begin, I'd like you to know, this is not my voice. I've employed this man to speak to you on my behalf. He's being fed his lines. I strained my ears, and I could hear the light tap of fingers on a screen across from me. There must be a seat facing mine. Someone else sitting there, writing his words on a tablet. I kicked my foot out and connected with someone's knee. A gasp of pain, a shuffle, the safety being switched off on a gun. Maybe he wasn't typing on a tablet after all, but I wasn't given time to consider it. I was thrown against the door, and after a scuffle, they bound my legs.
"I have no intention of hurting you, idiot child," the voice said. "Stop flailing about."
There was a pause while everyone settled back down. The car took a slow turn to the right. If I were Holmes, I would have tracked our route by the number of turns we'd made and deduced where we were going. 3, 4? I wished I had a map of the city committed to memory the way she did. But I didn't. I had to get over it. I focused instead on the car's interior. How many people were in here with me? 2, I knew for certain. When the voice spoke again, I listened for the dead places in the car, where his voice hit resistance. 3, maybe?
"This is not your fight. This was never your fight. You're putting Charlotte Holmes in danger."
The voice was English. That was a useless deduction, because I was surrounded by bloody English people, and it wasn't his real voice, anyway.
"Actually," I said, hoping to keep them talking, "I'm pretty sure you're the one putting her in danger, Hadrian."
I was pretty sure it wasn't Hadrian in the car with me, but it was worth a shot. Who else would have a fleet of black cars and bother kidnapping me to make their point? That said, I'd noticed that the Holmeses had at least one of these black cars, and a driver who took them around town. So did Milo. I wondered if a black car appeared in your garage the morning after you came into some money, like some kid's movie. Frog chauffeurs instead of coachmen. A bloodthirsty art dealer instead of your fairy godmother. The voice paused.
"According to my instructions, I'm supposed to laugh at you now."
"Go ahead." The voice managed a kind of embarrassed chuckle. More soft tapping sounds, but the voice spoke again before they finished.
"I won't give you my identity. It's not important. Know that I am an interested party, and I want you to begin booking your travel back home. You have no particular skills. You know this. You're a fairly standard teenage boy. You have no use but to be used."
I know it's fun to be cryptic, but that last thing made zero sense. I wanted the voice to keep talking, because as I wiggled my hands, I realized the zip tie wasn't as tight as it needed to be.
"Think of yourself as a package. It's Christmas, so picture a nicely wrapped present. Charlotte carries it around. It's heavy in her arms, but it's pleasing to look at it. Maybe the package talks. It's witty. It's flattering. It makes her feel special, and she likes that feeling. And one day, Charlotte leaves it somewhere in public, and poof, it is taken from her. Charlotte is sad. Then furious. Charlotte will do anything to get her present back. Horrible things. Things that will end in her death or imprisonment. We don't want Charlotte to do these things."
So, in this weird children's story you're telling me, I'm a talking package. I'd put my wrists between my knees, and slowly, slowly, I worked one curled hand out of its binding.
"That's a pretty stupid extended metaphor. Did you fail English class? You were more of a math person, weren't you?"
A pause.
"Go home, James. You know that you can't offer her anything."
My hand was almost free. With my elbow, I felt as unobtrusively as I could for the location of the door handle.
"I do make a pretty mean pasta carbonara."
The car slowed. Were we coming to a stoplight?
"Go home," the voice said sadly. "Or we'll call your father."
I laughed. I couldn't help it.
"Please," I said. "I haven't talked to him in a few hours. He'll want an update."
And when I jerked my hand out of the tie, I pulled the door open and tumbled out of the car. Wheels skidding on concrete,
my fingers yanking off my blindfold, honking, someone shouting, and a mess of cars pulling around me. But I'd learned at least one thing in the last few months. Before I crawled the 2 feet to the curb, I committed the black car's plate number to memory. I told the crying bystander that I hadn't been kidnapped. I told the other one that she didn't need to call the cops. She did anyway, so I told the police my friends and I were doing a German fire drill. No, I didn't know the name of the driver or the person the car was registered to. I just met them today. No, I didn't want to make a statement. Yes, I'd pick my friends better in the future. No, I was fine walking down the block to Greystone, because that's where we were, within sight of Milo's headquarters, and I wanted to be spared the indignity of being driven the final 5 feet. I limped the rest of the way there. I'd sort of wrenched my shoulder in my roll out of the car, scratched up my hands. They were still battered from a run-in I'd had this fall with a two-way mirror, and it didn't take much for them to start bleeding again. The guards at the Greystone front door took pity on me. This time I was only subjected to a retinal scan. I needed to find Holmes, though I wasn't looking forward to it. Breaking news. I got into a strange car where someone told me I was useless. How was your afternoon? No one in our shared room. No one in Milo's penthouse, at least the areas I was allowed into. I definitely wasn't going to ask the guard in the hall to let me search his bedroom. I asked her if she'd seen Holmes or August, and she shrugged, like it was beneath her to answer. Well, is there a lab here? One that's usually off-limits to Holmes?
If you're referring to Charlotte, then yes. 94% of this building is off-limits to Mr. Holmes's sister.
I've had a very bad day, I told her, and I'm 100% sure you know where she is. Will you just take me there? Down 3 floors and around the corner, and the weary guard led me to a keypad-locked door. She punched in the code and nosed the door open with her rifle.
Our audio-visual laboratory.
The lab was the kind of bright white clean I associated with the dentist. Computer terminals were set up in a cluster in the center of the room, and big bug-like speakers and screens mounted on the walls. Holmes sat below a cluster of those screens. She'd taken one apart with a screwdriver. At least, I assumed that's what she'd done, because she had a toolbox beside her. And now she was plucking at a series of black wires with a pair of pliers. She was whistling something tuneless and gleeful, so I assumed it was going well. August Moriarty had scooted up a swivel chair behind her. He leaned over her shoulder, saying something into her ear.
"I have a Watson for you, Miss Holmes," the guard announced.
Neither of them moved. I cleared my throat.
"A bleeding Watson who's been kidnapped."
August stood up. Holmes wrenched her head around.
"Thanks," I said. "If I want to get your attention next time, should I be an actual bomb?"
For the record, I was in a really bad mood.
"Your hands," Holmes said, and she crossed the room to me. "What happened to your hands this time?"
I held them up, letting the blood drip on the floor. "Black car, plate 653-764. Lavender air freshener. 2 people in the car, maybe 3. I'm not sure. I was blindfolded. I didn't get the particulars, but I think they drove around in a circle. It took about 5 minutes.
Watson, I don't need a report just now.
They told me I was useless, that I should leave you here and go home." She looked at me steadily. She didn't say a word.
"And when I rolled out of the car, I think I dislocated my shoulder. August, could you? I need it put back into place."
He went pale.
"Isn't there a doctor on the Greystone staff?" "Oh, for crying out loud," Holmes said. "What on earth did they teach you at Oxford?"
And after mapping my shoulder with her palms, she made me lie on the floor. Then she stuck 1 foot on my stomach and jerked my arm back into place. I shouted. Louder than I needed to, maybe. I took a breath. Straightened. I tried my shoulder. The pain wasn't any worse. It had lessened slightly.
"It would probably be a bad idea for me to ask you for painkillers," I said to her as she helped me to my feet. "Probably," she said. "Though I might have something in my shoe if you want me to look."
I looked sharply at her, which set off another spasm of pain, and she put up her hands. What's in, please? I'm joking. The plate number you gave me is one of Milo's cars. The cars in his personal fleet all start with 653. I'm sure he's just worried about your safety. This isn't exactly your mission.
I wasn't looking for reassurance from her, but I also wasn't looking for her to join in to that particular chorus.
Right then, I said. Your brother wouldn't, I don't know, call me and ask me to leave? I'm sure he appreciated the theatrics of it all. Lavender air freshener. That sounds wretched enough to be him.
She took one of my arms by the wrist and peered at my palm.
These are fairly minor abrasions. I'll cool down for some bandages and we can get back to it.
Back to what, exactly? How have you spent your afternoon?
Picking apart that screen.
I didn't realize you'd started up an AV club in my absence. She frowned at me.
That was the security feed we were running. It stopped working. I'm fixing it. Don't talk to me like I'm a child. Stop acting like one, then. How was Marie Helene?
How do you think she was?
Stupid enough to find your little act charming.
She isn't stupid.
Really, she said. I consider myself to be fairly intelligent, and right now I find both you and Simon obnoxious. How do you square that?
I kept my voice cold. I made out with her until she showed me a floor's worth of forged paintings. They were done as assignments for a Zeppelin class, taught by Nathaniel Ziegler. I didn't see any of Langenberg's work, but I didn't get through the whole building. It doesn't matter. We have enough to know this is the connection Leander was exploring. I know this isn't exactly my mission or anything, but if I were to guess, I'd say that Leander was just trying to track down the intermediaries, figure out how the money was changing hands. You always follow the money, right? It's like hot potato. Whoever's left with the cash in the end is the guiltiest one. I'm not stupid. I've never been stupid. I got good grades. I paid attention when someone was teaching me something, and I made it a point to learn it fast. Fine, I didn't have Holmes's training or her aptitude, but just because I wasn't a genius didn't mean that I wasn't smart. And no, this wasn't my mission. It was our mission. Her uncle was missing, but he was my father's best friend, and I had as much of a right to be there as she did. I was done taking a constant back seat, taking bullshit from strangers who hauled me off the street at gunpoint to dress me down. I was done with the way August was looking at me, even now, with the kind of indulgence you showed to a well-behaved chihuahua. "You want this solved by midnight?" I said, rubbing my shoulder. "Then I'll get my father to give up the IP addresses on Leander's emails, if he won't give us the emails himself. Your uncle had to live somewhere while he was conducting his investigation. Let's go there. Shake it down. Someone run Nathaniel Ziegler through Milo's criminal databases. Can we get some known associates? It was smarter to send me on a date with an art student while you played mechanic here at home." Holmes stared at me. I couldn't tell what she was thinking.
"Your uncle is missing, Holmes."
"Jamie," August said, a warning.
"Whatever. I don't care. August, you've been here all afternoon. Haven't hijacked any black cars today?"
"No," he said, inflectionless.
"Then what have you been doing?"
It was hard to keep from shouting. I needed to see some answering anger flare up in her face, any reaction at all. August stepped forward to put a hand on her shoulder. They looked at each other. He shrugged. She nodded. It was the kind of wordless back and forth I was used to having with her.
"My mother," Holmes said at length, "is now in a coma."
"A coma?" I stared at her. "I thought the poisoning was an isolated event. I thought..."
"We thought wrong."
"Shouldn't this be our priority?" I asked, starting to pace. "Shouldn't we put the rest of this on hold? Go back to England? Your mother's life is on the line here." She regarded me evenly.
"No.
You're sounding kind of heartless right now, just so you know."
"These things are connected, Watson. My mother, Leander, if I solve one, I'll solve the other, and I'm so sorry if it offends your delicate sensibilities if I happen to love my uncle more."
Visibly, she swallowed.
"I love her too, you know, but I need to prioritize. My mother can take care of herself." from her coma.
Behind Holmes, August glared at me. Her expression was a mirror of his.
I've only heard about this from my brother's intel. My father hasn't told me anything at all.
Annoyed, she gestured to the screen.
Milo is beaming me footage from Thailand so I can review it for myself, but no one and nothing has entered the house that wasn't there yesterday. Milo just fired the whole staff as a precaution. The only people...
With a sigh, she raked back her hair.
My father and the doctor attending to my mother. That's all I can tell.
And Lucien? I asked.
Moriarty hasn't made any kind of move. Not that Milo can tell. Nothing that he can stop.
I'm sorry. She slipped out from August's hand and crossed to me. His eyes tracked her across the room.
I'm tired, Watson, she said. I'm working two cases at once, and they both concern my family. It's not like anything I've taken on before. Milo's stupid surety isn't helping. I'm positive he's missed something. I know who the culprits are. I just don't know how they've done what they've done.
Don't you usually reason from the facts? I asked her, instead of assigning blame and working from there. Holmes shrugged, but I could tell I'd hurt her.
I'm not Sherlock Holmes. This isn't a case study. My uncle is missing, and the only possible answer is that it's the Moriartys behind it. One way or another, they've done this. Sorry, August.
August grimaced.
Is there any value in having Milo remove Lucien? I asked. And Hadrian? She asked. And Philippa? And their bodyguards? Why do you think they haven't taken us out directly? Why do you think they haven't sent us Leander's body via parcel mail? Put a bullet in my mother's head?
Rubbing my shoulder, I thought about it. What was the only thing worse than the confirmation of your greatest fear?
Because the uncertainty is worse.
She spread her hands as if to say, there you have it.
Are you done berating me?
What about my ideas?
They have value, she admitted. Of course they do. Of course you do. What do you take me for? Some kind of machine? If I wanted a yes man, don't you think I'd find one that wanted to yes me more often?
I bit back a smile. That's fair.
Don't you think, she said, drawing closer, that there's some irony in someone taking the trouble to anonymously kidnap you? If everyone keeps insisting you're unimportant, you have to ask yourself why.
I'm sorry about your mother, I told her quietly.
I am too.
She considered me for a moment, eyes bright.
Should we divide up the work, then? You'll call your father. I'm sure August wouldn't mind doing some data mining in Milo's systems. He was hired to do that sort of thing.
August shrugged.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to spend more time with Milo's security feeds. When I was younger, I was made to find my way through my own house, blindfolded. I know every room. This feed is missing some.
Was Milo trained that same way? I asked, wondering why he'd skip surveillance, wondering why we were all apparently wandering around with our eyes covered.
No,
she said absently. Her attention had drifted back to the broken screen.
He was always away in our father's study. He speaks 5 languages, but I doubt he's ever seen our basement. Shall we regroup in an hour?
But when I reached the door, she cleared her throat.
Watson.
What?
You only... You kissed her?
Her back was to me.
Yeah,
I said, wishing I could see her face.
Will you see her again?
I don't think so. Holmes bent her dark head over the tangle of wires on the desk.
That's all,
she said finally, and when I left, August was at my heels. I'm going to call my dad, I told him. Can you give me a minute?
Do you two fight like that often?
No. Well, yes. Lately, I guess we fight like that a lot. I shrugged. I'm sorry you had to see it. I don't know how you two are still friends. That's kind of bizarre, coming from the aberrant Moriarty who can't get mad at the girl who ruined his life. His eyes wandered over to the closed lab door. Isn't getting past it better than the alternative? It depends what the alternative is.
Is there one?
A sane one, I mean. He sighed.
I don't hate her. I'm not a terrible person.
I watched him, the sad mask of his face, the dark clothes edged bright against the fluorescent-lit hallway. "You could be a decent person," I told him, "and still not like her." "Then what am I left with?" His mouth twisted into a smile. "I'm her friend, and because I'm her friend, I'm going to go do some data mining for her. For free." "You're hunting down art forgers," I called after him as he set off down the hall. "You can be excited about it. I give you permission not to be a sad sack." "Sorry about your shoulder," he said. "Just so you know." And he was out of sight. I wasn't sure if he was just being very English, or if August had actually orchestrated that whole blindfolded joyride. Access to Milo's cars, his team, resources. I should be mad about this, I thought. He had a gun pointed at me by proxy. He told me to leave all this and go home for Christmas. He threatened to call my father. No, I was crazy. He wouldn't go that far just to prove a point. Just to get me to get safely home. Would he? Breathe, I told myself. Friends don't kidnap friends. If we were friends. I took a deep breath. I needed another opinion. When I called him, my father picked up on the second ring. "Jamie," he said, too eagerly. "News, tell me." There was a commotion in the background, the crackle of a party, a child crying. "What time is it there?"
"I'm at your stepmother's family's Christmas brunch."
"Oh, I don't want to bother you," I said. "Can I call back?"
"Yes, that's such an interesting, complicated problem." "Oh, no, Abby, I need to go take this outside. It'll only be a minute."
"No, go ahead and play without me. I'm so sorry to have missed another round of charades."
"Having fun?" I asked him. For some reason, I'd never stopped to think that my father had a whole new set of in-laws. I wondered how they stacked up against my mother's family, the Baylors. On her side, I had one cousin. He was a 55-year-old accountant.
"I'm on the porch," I heard him slide the door shut behind him.
"There are so many of them, Jamie, and when they're not burning down the kitchen, they're giving Robbie fireworks to set off in the backyard. It's been a hazardous holiday."
My half-brother Robbie was 6.
"They sound a little like you."
"If I watched professional wrestling instead of solving crimes," my father huffed. "Well, what have you discovered? Or are you calling to apologize for ignoring my texts?"
"I haven't discovered anything. Milo's doing all the work."
"You and I both know that Milo is doing none of the work, or else Leander would have been delivered home this morning. Tell me what you've found."
I filled him in on the day's findings, including my brief kidnapping and my theory as to the perpetrator.
"Well, it certainly sounds like a ham-handed attempt at altruism," he said. "You're not badly hurt?"
"Then no harm done, really. August does seem like a nice young man from what you've said."
Maybe I was mad at him after all. "August and my father, thanks for your support." He ignored that.
"It's good to hear that you're coming up with some strategy of your own. It sounds like your poor Charlotte is distracted, and with good reason. It's terrible to hear about her mother. Emma might be a bit of a witch, but no one deserves that."
"You've met them? Holmes's parents?"
"A few times. They were quite fun when we were younger. Emma's a brilliant chemist, you know. Works for one of the big pharmaceutical companies. Mostly I saw her flex her skills when she made us cocktails. Molecular mixology. Anyway, she and Alistair came to visit us in Edinburgh when Leander and I were flatmates. Alistair would tell us wild tales about his exploits in Russia. I always thought of him being a bit like Bond. I'm sure that was the image he wanted me to have of him anyway."
"What happened?" "They sounded nothing like the people I'd met."
"They got married, had Milo, and then, and please don't tell your friends this, they went through a bad patch and had Charlotte, I think, as a fix-it. People do that with children sometimes. It's a terrible idea for everyone involved. But Alistair had gotten sacked by the MOD.
"I thought the Kremlin tried to have him assassinated," I said, "and that the government made him retire for his own safety."
"Is that what Charlotte told you?" He sighed. I don't know for certain what happened. I got the impression from Leander that he'd gotten caught feeding classified information to the Russians. That's not important. Either way, he lost his job. They were having money problems. You've seen that, Harris. It's absurd to imagine the upkeep. They were fighting about it, and so they had a child. That child was Charlotte. And while I love your friend, Jamie, I don't think she's ever made anything easier for anyone. I bristled. That's an awful thing to say. The state of her parents' marriage isn't her fault, he said. But she put extra weight on an unsteady foundation. They're not happy people, Alistair and Emma Holmes. Not the way Leander is. Not the way I imagine myself to be. I know. My father could be called a lot of things, but miserable wasn't one of them. Try to keep that in mind as you're going through all this with Charlotte. It can be so easy to get bogged down in it. The darkness, the heartlessness. Not in Holmes, of course. Well, sometimes. I didn't know what Holmes he was talking about there. I don't know if he did. Besides, you're young, much younger than I was when I got mixed up with this lot. I don't want it to ruin you. Why won't you let me read Leander's emails? I asked. He'd mentioned his friend's name so many times, always with such longing. It didn't sound romantic. It didn't sound unromantic either. It sounded like he was mourning the loss of a limb. He was silent for a moment. Well, he says a few things about his niece that aren't very nice. Really? They seem really close. They are, he said. But she's a teenage girl and makes mistakes and... Oh, damn it, those emails are private, Jamie. They weren't meant for you. I'm sorry to put it so plainly, but I need to make you understand. I'm so far away from all of it, and thank God for that, because the last case I took with him, it almost killed us both. I have small children. I live in America. I need that distance. But you can't cut him off completely? Yes. Well, listen, I'll send you the IP addresses from his last few emails. Maybe Milo's grunts can make something happen on that front. Hold on. He covered the receiver with a hand. There was some muffled conversation, and when he got back on, his voice was ridiculously jolly. Well, son, I've been told that I need to go sing about figgy pudding. Happy I could help with your girl problems. We'll talk more soon. I'll send what I promised. Love you, Jamie. Bye, Dad, I said. You too. So, Nathaniel Ziegler, Holmes was saying an hour later, spinning back and forth in her rolling chair. Was arrested for possession 3 years ago. Want to know the address? Let me guess. August paused for dramatic effect. He was sprawled on Milo's couch. We'd taken over his penthouse, despite the complaints of his staff. There was more space here than in our room. 221B Baker Street. Yes, you're a rare wit, August. Have a cookie. The address, in fact, is one we visited last night. She gave us a street name ending in Strasse. Would the underground pool ring a bell? The place was raided, August sat up. During a party. According to the report, he lived there. I remembered what Hannah said about the art school girls who hung on older men's arms for money and connections. I wonder if that was how he met Hadrian. It certainly fits, Holmes frowned. And Leander's supposed to be meeting him tonight, Watson? I thought back to my conversation with Nathaniel at his loft. Yeah, if he shows up. The way he reacted when I told him that Leander was hanging out back at home, it was like he knew that wasn't possible. You mean to say he reacted like he knew Leander was dead? I shifted in my chair. Leander isn't dead, she said. I know it for sure. For a fact, August asked. Or for sure? Holmes lifted her chin. He can't be dead, she said, and there was only the slightest quaver in her voice. I had a lot of experience fighting Holmes over her outlandish assertions, but I didn't have the heart to insist that, yes, in fact, her favorite uncle could be lying in a ditch somewhere. We can. So? So, it's 7 o'clock already. I doubt Leander's usual time for meeting Nathaniel was any earlier than 8. He's been at this for a while. He wouldn't want to meet even at twilight.
He'd want the cover of darkness. Still, I have access to the cameras covering the corners in case he shows early.
She swiveled her chair to look out the window.
East Side Gallery is a big place. It's a tourist destination. We need a plan to make this meeting work for us.
You do have an entire company of trained men at your disposal, August said.
Do I? She asked. Even if they'd follow my lead, using other people's men leaves a rather large margin for error.
You really think your brother would hire subpar help?
Holmes snorted. You've met my brother, haven't you?
No, we do this alone.
You could kidnap Nathaniel, I said, only half joking.
Hey, maybe August could do it.
He started.
Better not, he said.
Was that an admission of guilt?
Oh, I was going to murder him.
And what? Torture him back at home until he tells us that he thinks Leander's dead?
She got to her feet.
Think, would you?
The ceiling fan whirred. The clock in the kitchen chimed the hour.
Holmes paced in front of the window, talking to herself. For my part? Well, I had no part. What could I possibly suggest?
What do we even want from Nathaniel? I said aloud. His ties to Hadrian Moriarty? We have August there. He's a better link than Nathaniel could ever be, if we need to flush Hadrian or Philippa out. She's already asked us for access to August.
Look, do we want Leander back, or do we want to solve the crime he was investigating?
Holmes and August looked at each other.
What? Is that a stupid question?
I thought about it while we suited up. It only took a few moments to put myself into my Simon guise, a hat, a vest, the steel-toed boots. I was playing him again in case Nathaniel managed to catch sight of me, since I didn't look dissimilar enough from Simon to convincingly claim I was anyone else. But as I parted my hair in the mirror, I realized that it was weirdly comforting to be him again, Simon. I knew how he walked, talked, how he thought, what he'd say. I didn't always know those things about myself. To my surprise, Holmes didn't have her wig cap on. She didn't have on a costume either. She'd changed into a new pair of black jeans, a black button-down shirt done up to the collar. With her usual intensity, she was rooting through a makeup case.
How are you doing yourself up?
August asked her, adjusting his fake nose.
Tourist? Nanny? Sorority girl?
Myself, she said, looking in her hand mirror.
In the other universe where I am an art student desperate for lodgings.
With a small brush, she began doing her eyes up in silvers and blacks.
Won't that be a hazard? August asked.
You could always go redhead.
If you want to help, you can fetch me a curling iron, she told him. And after that, you can decide how badly you want Hadrian to continue thinking you're dead.
That sounded like a threat, he said mildly. She took the iron from him and plugged it into the wall.
Either you're in or you're out. For the record, I'm fine with you staying here. I'm sure Milo has some data entry you can do.
He stared at her for a moment, his face drawn.
I'll go, he said, with a barely concealed edge. I suppose I already have my nose on.
East Side Gallery wasn't one. Or it was, but its name made it sound like it was tucked away in some snooty building where people drank champagne and bought paintings for millions. I don't know why I'd expected that here, a city where art was everywhere, transforming everything, a public act of reclamation. Because East Side Gallery was the Berlin Wall, the wall that had divided the east part of the city from the west, a result of World War II and later the Cold War, a symbol of a divided, unequal Berlin, one run by outside forces, separated by a wall that was barbed and booby-trapped and separating the poor, communist-controlled eastern side from the richer, capitalist west. After demolition finally began on the wall in 1990, artists began painting murals on a mile-long section. Long, uncanny, evocative murals of men wandering against a dark screen like ghosts, of doves and prisons and melting figures in the desert. We approached it on foot, and I lagged a few steps behind Holmes in August, reading a short history of it all on my phone. The last few weeks felt like a history lesson I'd only caught the tail of. One on Berlin, but on London, too. On love and inheritance and responsibility. It was like I was trying to read the cheater notes on the last century right before a midterm. All of this made me feel really young. Something I wasn't used to, not when I was next to Holmes. She operated with such absolute confidence, even when the playing field was thick with adults. But now, walking this strange, lovely city after dark, the hint of snow on the wind made me pull my jacket a little tighter around myself, wishing I was home with Shelby and my mother, watching TV under a blanket on the couch. We weren't the only ones out after dark. Tourists clustered in front of a mural made of handprints, fitting their own palms against the wall. A street artist was selling painted tiles on the corner, playing quiet Europop from a battery-operated stereo. A pair of girls took turns taking pictures in front of a mural that depicted long, twirling locks of hair. The blonde girl laughed, tipping her head forward so that her curls spilled over her face, and as the other girl snapped photos, she said,
"Yes, you are my queen."
Holmes brushed past them, August at her heels, and the brunette girl said,
"Forget it. I want her hair," looking after the two of them with longing.
They made a striking pair, Charlotte Holmes and August Moriarty. He looked, as usual, effortlessly cool. This rankled, especially when I knew my own came with a good bit of trying. He dyed his faux hawk a temporary dark brown, and his false nose turned up at the end. But he was wearing his typical ripped jeans and bomber jacket, and Holmes strode beside him, looking now like a weapon made real. Her eyes were rimmed in a thick black that made her irises seem translucent. Her hair was a tumble of slept-in curls. She had a dark portfolio bag under her arm, and she walked like she had somewhere to be. We were still 10 minutes from 8 o'clock, the earliest she thought he'd show. But the East Side Gallery was a mile long, and though Holmes was checking her phone to see if Milo's grunts had caught sight of Nathaniel on their security feeds, we hadn't spotted him yet. I was beginning to feel like we were too out in the open. There weren't any cafes around for us to hole up in if we were spotted. The road beside us was busy and broad, and there was no cover for us to duck behind. So we kept walking. Until, half a block ahead of us, I saw Nathaniel blowing on his hands on a street corner. My phone buzzed. Holmes had noticed him at the same time I did. "Approach him," her text read, "and tell him your uncle's sick." This hadn't been the plan. At all. "I barely escaped the last time," I typed back. "He's early. He's going to see us. Better we make it intentional. At least you're here at the right time. See if he'll take you back to his flat. We'll follow." And what would he do to me there? If he was working with Hadrian Moriarty, if, despite Milo's intelligence, he knew that Leander was dead, the only thing he could be doing here tonight was baiting a trap he'd set for us. We'd hardly made it out of our lunch with Philippa unscathed. I had to ask myself again, what were we even doing here? Ahead, August was saying something in Holmes's ear. She shook her head violently, but he ignored her. Half turned to me and nodded. Then he took off at a jog to meet Nathaniel Ziegler. Holmes stopped short. I was still a few steps behind, and August had a hand on the art teacher's back, steering him away from us, saying something to him I couldn't quite hear. "He's asking Nathaniel to take him to Hadrian," she said, turning to me. She looked ready to spit nails. "He's buying us time." "For us to do what?"
"To go raid Nathaniel's horrible house for evidence," she said. "Come on."
It started to snow. The trip across town took an agonizing 20 minutes in traffic. Holmes kept scrubbing fog from the window and glaring out into the road like she could will the other cars to disappear. We didn't know how much time we'd have. We didn't even know if Nathaniel still lived there, in that house above the cavernous pool, the place he'd been arrested for possession. "Did it say what kind of drugs he'd had on him?" I asked her at length.
"Pot, I think. I don't know how actively prosecuted it is. Someone might have had to rat him out to get the police's attention.
I'm sure his being a teacher didn't help.
The car slowed to a halt.
Finally, she said, and shoved a bill at the driver, pushing me out the door with her other hand.
I pulled on my gloves. The facade of the house loomed above us, a warning.
Is there a reason we aren't taking a Greystone car? My brother's men, my brother's cars. My brother having bugged my left shoe this morning and the right one yesterday. My brother who thinks that he and my father are infallible and that the rest of us are imbeciles.
She barked a laugh. Her breath came out in a cloud.
Do you know that in the footage he has, Leander has to look down to find the doorknob to our front door? The house he grew up in. He doesn't reach for it automatically. He looks for it. It's not him, Jamie. Who knows how he was really dragged out of there? They could have dressed someone up like him for the cameras. Milo says I'm imagining things. He thinks he can't make mistakes, and I play into it. I haven't done anything for myself since I've been here. I've just relied on him, and I...
She pivoted on her foot and made for the front door, but I caught her elbow and steered her back.
Take a breath. Don't look at me like that. Breathe. You can't go in there like this.
Breathe. She glared at me.
You are not my meditation tape.
And you're mad about something that isn't Milo. We stared at each other, inches apart. Her pupils were blown wide. I wondered, for an awful moment, if she'd taken something or if she was just upset, and I hated myself for not knowing how to read the distinction.
August is going to throw himself back in with them, she said,
a rush of words. She was standing too close to me. I could feel the heat of her breath.
He's going to get himself taken down, too. I can't... They're monsters, Jamie, and I swear to God I'm going to prove it.
She grabbed my hand.
There's no time. We have to go in. Look, you're my stepbrother. I'm starting at Zeeben after Christmas. We're looking for a place to stay until then, because my mum just threw us out.
Stop, I said, and brushed the snow out of my hair. For the barest second, she leaned into my hand. I have a better idea. The girl who answered the door had a pierced nose and a scowl. She said something to me in German.
English?
I asked her, and she nodded curtly.
Sorry, my friend left her camera at a party here last night. She said this guy was asking her about it. Brown hair, 40-ish, really loud. She thinks he teaches at the art school. Do you know who he is? You think Professor Ziegler could have stolen her camera?
The girl scoffed.
No.
She started to swing the door shut. I stuck my foot between it and the door frame.
Sorry, I said again. I'm not saying he stole it. I'm just wondering if he found it. She thinks she left it by the pool.
Holmes nodded beside her. Her body language mirrored the girl's, hand on cocked hip, a snarl. Strangely, it seemed like it made the girl more at ease.
I already said his name was Professor Ziegler, she said. His email is on the school website. I have to go.
I smiled at her, but I didn't move my foot.
Did he ever live here? Who are you? She asked, crossing her arms. Why do you care? My camera, Holmes said in a low, accented voice, costs me 3 months serving drinks to assholes.
The girl sighed.
Ziegler used to live here. The only man who ever lived here until the school found out and made him move. They didn't like that he lived with all college girls. Not his students?
Holmes asked her, disgusted.
College girls, not Zeeben girls. But Ziegler's friend owns the building, and so he got cheap rent. Whatever. Not important. Ziegler doesn't have your camera. He's not a thief, just a creep.
After a moment's pause, the girl shifted her weight and said,
I'll look for it. Your camera. Come back tomorrow, ask again. Who's his friend?
I asked.
Ziegler's friend. For the love of God, the girl said. His name was Moriarty.
And she slammed the door against my foot, once, twice, three times, until I pulled it away and limped triumphantly down the steps.
That was rather straightforward, Holmes said.
I could feel my pulse in my crushed big toe.
Well, I guess I'm not very subtle. It's been 30 minutes,
Holmes checked her phone.
Feel like doing one more?
3 long blocks and an alley, then 4 flights of stairs. Holmes moved like a dog on the scent. We were surprisingly close to our next destination. It only took us a few minutes to ransack Nathaniel's loft, the place we'd been to last night, where the draw and drink had been. Holmes had me pull up the public records on the building while she rifled through the sketches that the Zeeben students had left behind. "This place is owned by the school," I said, peering at my phone in the dark. "On the school webpage, it looks like it's listed under faculty housing, I think. The translate function is saying it's House for Grown Bears." She took the flashlight out of her teeth.
"Clearly he doesn't live here full time. Check the bedroom."
"What bedroom?" I craned my neck to look up into the loft. "The only thing up there is an easel."
"Exactly," she said, taking the sheaf of sketches and slipping it into her portfolio bag. "There has to be a third residence, some place where he actually lives. Hold on, I'm going to give it the loft once over. Look for loose boards, footprints, that kind of thing."
Holmes usually didn't explain her methods to me. "Need any help?"
"No,"
she said, with a bit more sharpness than necessary. I raised an eyebrow at her.
"We don't have enough time," she amended. "And anyway, you haven't gone through that closet yet,"
and she hoisted her bag over her shoulder and zipped up the stairs. The closet had a sad-looking jacket in it and a man's left snow boot. The kitchen cabinets had some mismatched wine glasses. Under the sink there was an old, disgusting plunger. Other than the chairs and tables I'd seen here the other night, the loft was empty of anything interesting. God knew I couldn't read clues into dust trails or windows cracked a half inch open. I looked around the loft with some disappointment. Surely somewhere here there was a clue to where Leander was being kept. There had to be.
"I found something,"
Holmes said, pounding down the stairs.
"Look."
Forms, a thick stack of them. The top one said invoice, and below it, an address for Hadrian and Philippa Moriarty. This painting for this amount of dollars, this painting for more. It was an inventory of all the work that Nathaniel had sold to Hadrian, his counterfeit middleman. "Langenberg," one of the pieces said, followed by an item number. I ran my finger down the list. Langenberg, Langenberg, Langenberg. "Where did you find that?" I asked.
"Under the floorboards, with this underneath. Look."
It was a business card, dog-eared and scuffed. "David Langenberg," it read. "Consultant." "That's descriptive," I said. "This was all in the floorboards?" Almost like she'd just materialized them.
"Langenberg,"
Holmes said impatiently. "I can read," I reminded her. "I thought that Hans Langenberg didn't have any children."
"He didn't, but he might have nephews. Great-nephews. Leander was posing as David, right? David Langenberg. Simple."
She tucked the card and the papers into her portfolio.
"Did your father text you those IP addresses?"
"Earlier, while we were at Eastside Gallery," I showed her the list on my phone.
"I haven't had a chance to look through them yet. Send them on to Milo's grunts."
She smiled at me, sleek and satisfied. "I thought you were just complaining about Milo's grunts doing all the work for you."
"Let them."
She closed the space between us, put her fingers on my chest. I almost recoiled. Was I being played? But then she scuttled back like she'd only then realized what she'd done.
"I'm starving. Don't you want to get dinner?"
Charlotte Holmes was never satisfied. Charlotte Holmes was never hungry. Charlotte Holmes was never the girl who convinced you to get a non-pizza and root beer floats from a sketchy little place in the tourist district, but that's exactly what she wanted to do. In the shop, we sat in the window watching the snowfall. She picked the pepperoni off the pizza a piece at a time, while I made notes on the IP addresses in my journal. "This one they pinpointed to Kunstschule Sieben," I said. "So at least one of the emails Leander sent was from there. Maybe he followed Nathaniel to school, or maybe it's the same IP address as that faculty housing." Holmes nodded, making a giant stack of pepperoni with her fingers. I wasn't sure how much she was paying attention. "There are a number from cafes. Milo's team sent along some names. It looks like Leander visited a Starbucks.
Do you think it's down the street from where he was staying? The last one is from this address here. I pointed to it with my pencil. It's in a part of the city we haven't explored.
Okay, she said.
Are you listening?